time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
And chomping on their cigars this morning for a pre-budget Outsiders session. A professor of institutional economics at RMIT University, Sinclair Davidson, impeccably Windsor knotted this morning, Sinclair.
Thank you very much. Couldn't let you down.
National Affairs Correspondent at New Matilda, Research Fellow at Deakin University, Ben Eltham, and James Patterson, Editor of the IPA Review. Welcome to you all.
Pleasure
Good
to be
morning.
With you.
Good morning.
Budget, 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 budget. Has there been, in this extraordinarily well-managed season of budget expectation management, a more unfortunate image than that of the Finance Minister and the Treasurer chomping on their stogies late last week?
It's just not a good look at all, actually, to be celebrating in the midst of budget cuts and broken promises. It's quite shocking, actually. I think the spin on it and management of a process like that, you'd expecting them to be looking sad and mournful, not at all celebratory.
When the rest of the process has been so impeccably spun and managed, I can't, Ben, remember a budget in recent recall where not only have we had, you know, the usual trail of leaks, but the whole setup of the situation, of the problem, of why we're doing this has been so elaborate.
I think it's been a confused mess, basically. I mean, I think the government's got its messages very mixed, and we're ricocheting around from the end of the age of entitlement to buying a whole bunch of joint strike fighters to then the commission of audit.
Maybe we're entitled to have joint strike fighters.
Oh, I think we probably are entitled to some national defence, but, you know, there has been a lot of confusion about whether we're spending or whether we're cutting and who's getting the tax cuts and are there tax rises, you know. So I don't think the government has handled its first budget particularly well leading in.
And James, is it clear for you? I mean, there is, as Ben suggests, a lot of stuff going about, but there seems to be, I think that there's clarity about how bad it's going to be, given how much we've been primed to expect various other things which are bad and politically damaging. The other side of Tuesday night must be quite dramatic.
Yes, well, I think one thing to keep in mind when analysing the pre-budget media strategy is to remember that not every budget leak is actually a leak. Sometimes it's an accident. And one press gallery journalist reminded me this week that journalists aren't completely crap at their jobs and occasionally they do come across a scoop. And I think that could possibly definitely be the case with the income tax hike, because the government's argument now is, look, stop getting so distracted and attracted by this income tax hike. When you see the picture of the full budget, no one's going to be talking about this small income tax hike. They're going to be talking about massive, massive cuts. Now, if that is true, then they would have been much better for the income tax hike to be announced along with the cuts instead of dominating coverage for 2 weeks and being a broken promise.
Unless the tactic is, despite the broken promise, that we needed at least that sort of sense of camouflage and that idea of we're all in this together. That's perhaps where the tax is important.
If they had known what was coming, I don't think they would have planned the pain they've had over the last few weeks. I mean, people have been in uproar and Bill Shorten's made great gains talking about broken promises, the income tax side is bad enough, but let alone if they go ahead with a petrol excise increase, which is going to actually hit everyone and in a pretty substantial way.
Is the broken promise thing the worst of it, Ben, or is it just that it's a bit of rubbish policy?
No, I think the worst of it actually is the fact that ordinary Australians don't really want big cuts to public spending. And I think that's what's driving the poll figures downwards for the government. People have had a look at this commission of audit and they've had a look at the rhetoric of slash and burn austerity, and I don't think they like it.
What do you think, Sinclair? I mean, is there a sense that the government is kind of believing its own story around the economy?
I actually think that what we're seeing is the politics and arrogance of power here, is that we had a government coming to office with a promise to cut spending, to get the budget in order and what have you, and on the promises there'd be no surprises and no tax increases. And they've broken that promise, or it looks to be that they will be breaking that promise. And this becomes another ETS moment when Mr. Rudd abandoned the ETS and people thinking, well, what did he stand for? And this is Abbott's problem. What does he stand for if he's going to break a tax promise, which is his whole reason for coming to power in the first place?
And it's worse than just undermining the credibility of a particular government. I mean, because of that accumulated
effect. It undermines politics, generally speaking. The story that I'm hearing from a lot of conservatives, it's better that Tony Abbott breaks his promise in office than Bill Shorten gets to keep his promises in office. Now, that's an astonishingly cynical view of our political process. And I think a lot of people think and know that we are entitled, dreadful word, we are entitled to better than that.
We're entitled to, James, to I think, feel that sense of cynicism that Sinclair mentions.
One of the most extraordinary things about this fight over the income tax increase has been the number of Liberal backbenchers and ministers who've been happy to be quoted off the record in the newspapers. We haven't seen this sort of off-the-record briefing since Malcolm Turnbull was Liberal leader and during the emissions trading scheme debate. Now, that's pretty extraordinary to think, particularly because we're only just 6 months into a brand-new government and Tony Abbott is not a weak opposition leader but a powerful prime minister.
And you mentioned that comparison. I mean, again, though, we have that issue on which the party divides. And there goes the discipline. I mean, we haven't had that sort of point of tension through the leadership of Tony Abbott to this point.
No, we haven't. But increasingly, Tony Abbott is making what are termed captain's picks or leader's calls. And there is a time at which I think patience for those will wear out. He made that on the paid parental leave scheme. He's doing it on this income tax increase. If he keeps doing things like this, and particularly if he chooses to do them in a way that really angers his own backbench and his own grassroots, that can't go on forever. That runs out at a point. The people's patience for that, there is a limit to it.
And people broadly, Ben, I think this is a really interesting point here, is just what we saw with Rudd, what we saw with Gillard, what we're now seeing with Abbott, and the sense that people have is that, damn it, none of you are to be trusted. That doesn't leave me voting necessarily for Clive Palmer, but it leaves me with a lack of empathy for the whole system.
Yeah, political capital can't really be hoarded. It has to be spent. And what's interesting about the sort of first 9 months of the Abbott government is how disorganised they've been in terms of carrying out their mandate. They haven't seemed to have had a unity of vision in terms of, right, we've been elected, this is what we're going to do. They've been all over the shop. And even things like Knights and Dames, that's an astonishing waste of political capital on a pretty trivial issue. Particularly if it was a captain's pick, as James sort of says it was.
But doesn't this point, James, to sort of an error in that campaign, that it wasn't a campaign that said much about what the first term agenda would be? It said, basically, first term we're going to do nothing. We're going to talk about some stuff that we might actually try and get a mandate for a second term agenda.
I don't think any political leader has ruled out as much as Tony Abbott did prior to the last election. And, figures in the government are saying, well, we're horribly hamstrung by what we said prior to the election. If we're going to deliver on our promise to get the budget, back into shape, we have to break one promise. So we have to pick the promise that we're going to break that's going to hurt us the least. And their judgment has been, that one of those promises is going to be tax increases. I'm not sure that's the right judgment, but in any case, it is a salutary lesson for politicians that don't be so, if you intend to actually do something when you get elected to power, don't be so, clear about what you're not going to do prior to the election.
Yes, a pit has been dug. Outsiders this morning on Sunday Extra, 10 minutes away from 10, they are James Patterson, you just heard, Ben Eltham, and Sinclair Davidson. Sinclair, let's cast forward a bit. I mean, it's outside of the politics. What ought we see on Tuesday night?
I think we need to see a clear and articulate plan where the budget goes back into surplus. Now, if we cast our minds back to the global financial crisis, the previous government spent a lot of money and they announced at the same time a plan back to surplus. That plan failed. They've paid the price of that. They got flung out of office. And we now have to see the other mob putting together articulating at least a plan to get back budget into surplus, debt down to manageable levels, and make sure that government isn't retarding economic prosperity going forward. Now, that's actually a hard job. Now, Wayne Swan gave it his best go and failed. And now we've got to see, can Hockey step up to the plate? And certainly the vision that I'm seeing around Hockey is not taking this as seriously perhaps as he could be, but Tuesday night is going to be the crunch time, and we will see on Tuesday night.
Do you agree, Ben, with that prescription?
No, I think Sinclair's wrong there. I think that the stimulus spending in 2009 was temporary and that Labor had cut spending back to pretty low levels by the time that they left office. Everybody knows, you just have to look at the budget papers, the problem with the budget is revenue, it's not spending. The reason why the budget is in deficit is because revenue is at about 22% of GDP, whereas under John Howard it was at 25%. So if we're going to talk about getting the budget back into surplus, we probably do need to look at tax increases. I mean, I'm actually quite supportive of these ideas like indexing fuel excise and raising taxes on high income earners. I'm surprised that this is a coalition government advocating for these policies, but I quite like them as a social democrat.
Isn't that exactly the problem that Mr. Abbott actually has? At some point, he's going to have to realise he needs his own supporters more than they need him, and he doesn't need Labor voters, more or less, supporting him.
And we're still to come to the point in this cycle we mentioned before, James, of the two terms where we have the actual revenue discussion, which puts this budget in a strange kind of place. The government really hasn't framed their thinking around revenue yet, and if there's a good example of that, it's the debt tax.
Well, but prior to last election, Tony Abbott said that we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem. So in his own words, there is no revenue problem to address. And I think it actually is an important, serious point here about spending versus revenue. The so-called stimulus spending put through the GFC peaked at 26% of GDP at the middle of the GFC. Last year, the government, as a percentage of GDP, was 25.9% of GDP. Yes. So far from what Ben says, that spending has been cut back, actually it's back basically where it was at the crisis point of the GFC.
Yes.
Revenue has dropped a little bit, but revenue has dropped less than revenue is than expenditure is increased by. And there's a whole lot of areas.
That's just not true.
Revenue is actually at its long-term average since 1971 to now. So revenues, its long-term average, yes, Howard did have more revenue than normally, but revenues back to its long-term average. Spending remains well above its long-term average. We have a spending problem, and Hockey needs to cut that spending and leave revenue alone like they promised dozens of times before the last election.
Ben?
Australia has the fourth lowest spending federal government in the OECD. I mean, we just don't have a spending problem.
That is just a bizarre point of comparison. You're putting Australia alongside France and Spain and Italy, who are other members of the OECD. The OECD
and
is
Korea,
not a great point
and
of comparison.
Plenty of other countries. There's 30 countries.
The other thing
in the
to bear
OECD.
In mind is we have a privatised superannuation system, which means you've got to strip out the socialised superannuation system in Europe when comparing to us. OECD comparisons tend to be very, very biased and very, very misleading, which is why big spenders like to make that comparison.
And there we have the dilemma in a three-way nutshell. Some way or other will be resolved on Tuesday night, thanks to Sinclair Davidson, Ben Eltham and James Patterson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Outsiders this morning.